From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. This week, I've chosen two articles to cover that I think are very interesting. One of them is a randomized trial looking at two different types of stents with PCI. And the other is a wonderful review on weight loss, diabetes, obesity, and potentially the role of metabolic surgery. So let's start first with the interventional article. This was a study, a randomized, single-blind, multicenter study called DISSOLVE 3 at 20 hospitals in Europe comparing a sirolimus-eluting bioresorbable polymer stent called an MI stent to an everolimus-eluting drug polymer stent, Exience. The primary endpoint was looking at non-inferiority of the device, composite endpoint, cardiac death, target vessel myocardial infarction, or clinically indicated target lesion revascularization at 1 year. The authors enrolled almost 1,400 patients with over 2,000 lesions, and the groups were equally divided with 703 patients getting the MI stent and 695 getting the Exience stent. Primary endpoint at a year occurred in 40 patients in the sirolimus-eluting stent group and 45 or 6.5% in the everolimus-eluting stent group. The rate of definitive or probable stent thrombosis was low, 0.7% in the sirolimus group and 0.9% in the everolimus-eluting stent group. And the conclusion by these authors was that the sirolimus-eluting bioabsorbable polymer stent was non-inferior to the currently used everolimus-eluting durable polymer stent that we're all familiar with. As you know, there have been seemingly a whole bunch of trials that have tried to show that a bioabsorbable polymer stent will ultimately carry the day over current stents that use a scaffold that is not bioabsorbed. This particular stent is interesting in that the bioabsorbable coating disappears in 3 months, but it is thought that the sirolimus persists in the vessel wall for up to 9 months. So these create theoretical advantages why this approach may be superior to the previous approaches. And we've seen over and over that many of these attempts at creating a successful bioabsorbable stent failed when it actually came to endpoints that matter, including myocardial infarction and cardiac death. So I do believe that this particular trial, although relatively modest in size, represents a new possibility. And I think we want to stay tuned as we go forward to this whole area of the creation of an effective and safe bioabsorbable coronary stent for PCI. So let me now move to the second article, and this is an absolutely wonderful review looking at metabolic surgery, weight loss, diabetes, and beyond. You and I deal with so many patients that struggle with their weight, and I think this article is really very helpful for putting this into context and at least helping us think about who we may want to refer for consideration of metabolic surgery. As you're aware, there is an alarming trend such that it's thought currently about a third of adults in the United States are categorized as being obese. And the world population, it's thought that a fifth of the world population will be obese by the year 2025, and 12% of them will have type 2 diabetes. This is a tsunami of metabolic disease in the world. Obviously, the associates of metabolic diseases with obesity include cardiovascular disease, coronary disease, heart failure. Clearly, these are all very important. And the mechanisms by which obesity leads to coronary disease are complicated, but they include metabolic, hemodynamic, and inflammatory effects that may be seen with this adipose tissue mass. Obviously, you and I are familiar with the fact that exercise and diet have generally had a disappointing effect and generally not a durable effect on weight loss. But there are a few studies that are looking more promising. One was a trial called Look Ahead, Action for Health and Diabetes, which was a study looking at taking patients who are overweight or obese and assigning half of them to a lifestyle intervention with a calorie goal of 1,200 to 1,800 kcals per day and more than 175 minutes of moderate intense physical activity a week. And these people had a meaningful weight loss. More than 5% of their initial weight was achieved at 8 years, which was significantly better than the group that was in control. Behavioral therapy to promote healthy lifestyles should be provided to all patients who have obesity. Obviously, major components of lifestyle therapy include reducing calorie intake, increasing physical activity, and behavioral interventions. And generally, it's thought that the energy deficit that you and I should try to help our patients achieve should be in the range of 500 to 750 kcals per day. Moderate aerobic exercise, at least 150 minutes a week, distributed over 3 to 5 days, combined with resistance training 2 to 3 days a week is recommended. And self-monitoring and goal setting is very important. In general, you want to set an aggressive goal. If a patient has obesity and prediabetes or metabolic syndrome, you want to target something around 10% weight loss over a period of a year. There are currently 5 anti-obesity agents that are approved in the United States. This is drug therapy for obesity. They include orlistat, lorsasserine, naltrexone, bupropion, phentermine, topiramate, and liraglutide. And all of these can enhance weight loss. They have different mechanisms and different effects. If you look at the results with these at 1 year, weight loss ranged from 2.6 kilograms with orlistat to as much as nearly 9 kilograms for the combination of phentermine, topiramate. Contemporary guidelines suggest that we think about medications in addition to lifestyle for people with a BMI greater than 30 kilograms per meter squared or 27 if they have one associated comorbidity and are motivated and have failed with typical weight loss efforts. So one important part of this question about medications is that if you initiate one of the anti-obesity medications, if you haven't achieved more than 5% of body weight reduction at 3 months, you should stop because the side effects of the drugs are not insignificant. And if the patient is not getting success, then you don't want to continue them. And it's also important to note that only liraglutide has demonstrated a significant clinical cardiovascular benefit up until now. Another part of treating patients who are obese is the recognition that how we lower glucose may have an effect on weight. So anti-diabetic agents such as metformin or the alpha-glucosidase inhibitors, also the sodium glucose cotransporter 2 inhibitors, and the glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor antagonists are not only effective in lowering glucose, but they also help lower weight. There are other drugs for diabetes that are either neutral or associated with weight gain, and those include insulin and sulfonylureas. Also recall that antidepressants and antipsychotics are often associated with weight gain, so we have to be aware of these. Now let's move then to consideration of gastrointestinal surgery, or sometimes referred to as bariatric surgery. Obviously, because obesity is such a common problem, it's not a surprise to you that the therapy using surgery for obesity is growing throughout the world. And in 2014, there were nearly 600,000 metabolic procedures performed in the world for obesity. Randomized trials of metabolic surgery have clearly shown superiority of surgery over medical treatment alone for improving glycemic control and also reducing cardiovascular risk factors and improving outcomes. So this is, I think, well known. Many patients who undergo surgery for obesity will have resolution of their type 2 diabetes, and this obviously can be a huge benefit for these patients. Now, there are several different types of surgeries that your patients might be referred for. All of these currently are done laparoscopically. They include a Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, sleeve gastrectomy, an adjustable gastric banding, and a biliopancreatic diversion with duodenal switch. The sleeve gastrectomy has recently replaced the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass as the most commonly performed weight loss procedure worldwide. You should also note that if you look at the success of weight loss after adjustable gastric banding, it is generally less effective than the Roux-en-Y procedure or the sleeve gastrectomy. As a consequence, this type of operation has declined substantially in recent years. The health benefits of metabolic surgery have to be weighed against the possible complications. Risk factors for a higher risk of complications include male sex, smoking, older age, bigger BMI, of course, and increasing number of comorbidities. The risk of death in the United States looks to be about 0.1%, but 9% have an in-hospital morbidity rate. Most common cause of death, as you might expect, is venous thromboembolism, and among the more common side effects would be gastrointestinal leaks. Also, when you do gastric surgery, you can see nutritional deficiencies due to inadequate intake, malabsorption, etc. So there can be micronutrient deficiencies like vitamin D, calcium, and iron. Anemia occurs in up to 3/4 of patients and is mainly due to deficiencies of iron and B12. So we need to pay attention to those. In a recent meta-analysis of 11 randomized trials of almost 800 obese patients, metabolic surgery resulted in about a 50-pound weight reduction compared to non-surgical therapy, and in several studies have been shown to affect mortality out at 5 years. Clearly, the candidate for metabolic surgery has to be carefully selected. You need a multidisciplinary team. Patient has to have acceptable operative risk. They need to be motivated to lose weight. They need to have been tried on behavioral-based therapy and failed. And clearly, optimization of glycemic control is important. And if they could not achieve that with behavioral and or medical therapy, then metabolic surgery should be considered. Alcohol or substance abuse would be a contraindication. A psychiatric disorder would be a contraindication, or a poor understanding of the risks and the benefits. And these patients have to be committed to nutritional supplementation and long-term postoperative follow-up in order to get an excellent outcome. So I think that this article really does a nice job of putting metabolic surgery in perspective. It can be highly effective for carefully selected individuals. And I thought this review in total casts light on a very common problem that you and I deal with all the time. And I wanted to at least summarize the key points to remember. The article's title is Metabolic Surgery, Weight Loss, Diabetes, and Beyond. And it will be available to you on acc.org if you want to read the article in its entirety. So we've talked about two articles this week. One is on interventional cardiology, looking at a totally bioabsorbable stent. The other, an update on obesity, metabolic syndrome, and potentially the roles of both medical and surgical therapy. I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from acc.org. All of this information can be found on the American College of Cardiology's website. Find us online or wherever you get your podcast. And until next week, thanks for tuning in.